Today, we're talking about the future of trading in Africa, where the industry is heading, and how traders are transforming from beginners into professionals. Joining me today is someone that needs no introduction, Mr. Kojo Forex. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Very good. So good to see you.
Good to see you too.
This is round three, I believe.
Yes.
Okay, it's good. And this today, I'm very excited because it's a different take and different approach than what we've discussed before. And it's really going to look to help our listeners really understand about Africa and Forex trading and CFD trading. And obviously, you are the Oracle, and we want to hear from you exactly how where things are headed and how things are going. So again, thanks for joining us, Kojo.
Thank you.
Let's have something to warm us up a little bit. And Kojo, if you had to describe Africa's trading journey in one word, what would it be?
I would say evolved.
Evolved?
Yeah, okay. Evolved. And that's because if you look at it from the hindsight, it's more like watching a child grow through like an infancy stage to a teenager to an adult and all of that. You know, trading has always been prevalent here on the continent, but it more like started from the south, right, and has gradually spread across, you know, to the east, west, and even towards the north. You know, I give credit to South Africans. You know, they really pioneered and spearheaded like the whole drive for forex trading in the continent. Mm-hmm. Back then, we'd have like traders from South Africa who would inspire us and then want to be like them and see them live their life and all of that, you know. Mm-hmm. So in general, I'll just use like one word, evolve.
I've worked within the African markets for such a long time, and there's definitely been a tremendous evolution, and it's just kind of gaining momentum. But I still feel that the market still has a lot of growing and development to do.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing you mentioned about South Africa is obviously, I believe they were one of the first to have financial regulation, and then I think it adopted into Kenya. So it's good to see that this type of more controls and these type of things are happening in Africa. So it's definitely good, and I do agree the evolution, and it's a rapid evolution as well. In relation to African traders, how have you seen them evolve over the past decade, perhaps from a mindset, discipline, maybe goals?
Yeah. So why I started with a conversation with the South Africans is that, like, yes, they spearheaded it, but the introduction and how we saw things back in the days, I'm talking early 2010s, 2011, 2012, was more from a typical lifestyle perspective, you know, where like if you're a mentor, we want to see you have like the flashy cars and all of that, and then barely ever talk anything real trading. It's like, well, however they made the money, we don't really care. All we care about is what we see, you know, the lifestyle. They're traveling, they're driving the fast cars and all of that. But right, people are beginning to like get so used to like the lifestyle and the cars, because it's like, okay, everybody can buy a car, almost everybody can like perhaps quote unquote rent a car. So people are not impressed with that anymore. People are shifting towards like, what can you teach me? What do you know? Like, what differentiates you? Can I really adapt your strategy? Is there a long-standing one that I can create a career out of? It's more like a leveler kind of a process now, where if you're not being deep in your education, then nobody really wants to like listen to you as much anymore.
Look, from my eyes or from my standpoint, I see that education is still king.
Yeah.
I mean, from your eyes, do you see that education will be kind of the approach going forward? Or do you see that maybe as traders are getting more developed in advance, maybe they're going to shift their needs to other areas of the business? How do you see the trader demands changing potentially?
To be honest, like, I don't think that people are condensed enough with education and knowledge to be like profitable yet, you know, like there's still a lot of gap from the few profitable traders and then unprofitable traders. So from education point, I'm talking about like profitability strategies that people can be more confident, independent, and say, I can create a career out of what I know what I'm doing in the market, you know. Okay. And so like that's why still we still have like a lot of people like literally every corner you turn setting up academies, and they're still thriving. The academy is getting filled because people are still thrilled with education, wanting to like learn. So I think like we're still in that era of spreading that information, people just getting used to like knowing that, okay, I can call myself a trader, you know. Then eventually they're going to evolve into like, okay, now I've been trading for a while now, like you are a mentor, what else do you do? I'm also interested in getting that side of the thing. And then now they dig into that part and be like, okay, now we all know that quote unquote kept secret, so let's all eat from the same pot. You know, what are you giving me for
exactly.
for being under you or being like your partner or whatever it is, you know. It used to be bad for people to think that you are their introducing broker or like your idea, why is like the conflicting interest and stuff like that.
Exactly. But
education in this essence is which some of us have spearheaded for a long time, you know, in various social media venues, is telling them that look, regardless of you being under me or not, you're gonna pay that broker the spread charges. So what is wrong if you came through me and then you're getting like an added advantage by joining my private group or like, you know, learning from me for free and then forfeiting the fee you would have paid if, you know, you just went by yourself. And that 100% charge would still be there regardless, you know. So now people are comfortable understanding that it's not a stigma anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And then they're beginning to understand. And people feel comfortable, even like regular traders who are not mentors, feel comfortable also like promoting their side of that business. And I think it all encompasses like the education part for me.
Got it. And I think that's actually helped the industry now that they've kind of broken past a barrier. But when I'm looking, or when you're looking at, let's say, new traders are coming in under you, or just, you know, that are trading, what do you think their actual overall and like long-term intention is with trading? Is it more of like a career path, or is it maybe just a, you know, supplemental income? What do you see that there is a more common narrative that is pushing them to trading?
Yeah. So again, under that evolving, right? Most newbies or new entrant traders used to be like more focused on the quick, you know, cash, right? And then it's not so long until they find out that it's not as rosy as it seems out there, you know, perhaps after blowing a few, you know, trading account and then reality hits in. And then they see the person that they've been looking up to or perhaps like influenced them to get into trading still lingering around and doing better, right? And then they tend to wonder, what are you doing different that you're still in this thing, thriving, and then I got introduced into it and then I'm probably like going downhill.
Yeah.
Then they start realizing that they have to start thinking about it more from a career perspective than just like, you know, a side hustle. So I tell people that if you want to get into trading, define your objective, right? It's either you want to actually make a career out of it, or you have a main income going on and you just want trading to be like a side piece that just, you know, keeps some extra source of income coming in. You know, once you do that, then there's no pressure on you to even do much, because like it becomes like very casual. If you make money, it's fine. If you don't make money, it's fine. If you even blow your accounts, I mean, you're not gonna be like financially bedridden.
Do you see a different commitment level or success level between those two groups? So you have group A who is more, I want to make this a career, or I need to make this my career, or this is, I have a great job, I'm a doctor, and I'm looking for some supplemental income. Do you see a difference between commitment or success levels between those two groups?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, for the most part, I'd assume that those that go full-time in, you know, do succeed, and then they succeed like wider or like exceedingly if things start really going well for them as compared to like the guy who's doing on the side.
Just because they're more focused?
Yes, just because they're more focused.
Is it common where someone's saying, I need to make this my career. I just lost my job and this is my savings and this needs to be my future. And because of that, they're going into trading with kind of their back against the wall or some kind of potential future emotions at play, you know, with maybe, you know, losing a house or not supporting the family. Do you find that those people then have a tougher time to succeed just because they have more kind of emotions involved or in the game?
That's the wrong intent, though. You cannot escape losses in the market, right? And no matter how many times you tell them, they lose $100 out of the $100,000 and they're going crazy. You get me? So for such a person, trading is not probably for you, you know?
When I speak to people, I 9 out of 10 people will tell me that they're like a serious trader.
Yeah.
And I'm in my head, I'm like, what is a serious trader? Having mentored thousands and tens of thousands of people, in your eyes, what would be the definition of a serious trader or someone who's taking trading seriously?
If you say you're a full-time trader, I tell people that it just goes way beyond just having that nice chart, you know, set up and then putting some FX on your name on social media.
Sure.
And like, because like that's what your life depends on. That's your family's life will depend on. That's what your future investments, your kids, your school, everything, you know. And with this, I'm going to plan my life this way. This is my expenses, this is my savings, this is my income, this is, you know, you're able to segregate everything. And if you're not able to like cover up that expenses from the income, then I don't think that
you're ready.
You're ready.
Got it. I mean, from your standpoint, you know, trading communities and education and mentorship has been a massive part of your success. Let's discuss how this kind of aspect of trading in Africa has evolved. So has it become more community-driven and mentorship-driven outside of just education?
Yes, community definitely. XNet is one broker that has been able to bring traders together, especially like mentors, right? Yeah. Or people that are pushing the whole trading ecosystem in the sub-region together. You know, the events like this brings us together and then we talk and share ideas and perspective. And it's fun to see. And then the people that are watching from the other side of the internet are always inspired and want to get in. Everybody's more concerned about who can I connect with to expand my territory and then to, I think it's a beautiful thing to see now.
I fully agree. I mean, for me, I love just getting all the, even just partners together.
Yeah, right.
And again, it's just creating that community. Hey, we're in this together. I don't see it as competition.
Yes.
I think that there's plenty of traders for everybody.
Yes.
But I think it's good for everybody to just interact. And also, I love the idea that, you know, for like we discussed a few, you know, when I had the last partner event, you know, one partner's issues, maybe another partner has had faced those same issues. And it makes them kind of feel, okay, I'm not alone here. It's actually a common issue.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it just kind of grounds everybody that, hey, okay, you know what, we have some things to work on and we're doing it together. So, definitely community, I think, is just starting to kind of build momentum.
Yeah.
And I'm glad at XNet that we really, you know, we make that a priority, as you've seen. But talking about Africa and the Africa markets, you know, one thing that I've just noticed that is not on the top of a trader's checklist is like regulations of like brokerages and these things. So I want to discuss kind of regulations a little more, because if I look at another market, maybe regulation is in the top 2-3 of the like top 5 priorities of a trader, whereas then maybe for a partner or a trader in sub-Saharan Africa, it's not. So what is your thoughts on this, and why is regulation, in your opinion, not so as important as it should be, and why are there not more regulators in this region?
Hi. I like this question. I have lived through a close-up and personal experience with the topic of regulation. As early as 2019, 2020, I had seen how like market that had some level of regulation thrived in terms of like building that confidence and boosting interest and letting people regulation, then it was going to like legitimize it. And then I'd also feel more comfortable putting it out there because obviously like it's in the books, you know? So that's what I did. I went to the Security and Exchange Commission in my country, Ghana. That was in 2018, 2019, walked up there. I'm like, I want to see who's in charge here, who's a regulator or CEO, whoever.
Yeah.
And then I want to make an appointment because I've got like some questions to ask and to talk about Forex regulation, CFD, because I mean, I've done my own research. There's none that exists. Are they making any plans? Can you imagine that they were only as limited to talking to me about Forex Bureau?
Oh, like actual, like physical exchange.
Yes, and they didn't.
But they probably didn't even understand.
They didn't know anything.
Yeah, like, I imagine. That's the Security Exchange Commission.
Yes, and it was scary for me. I'm like,
it was scary for me.
It was embarrassing as well. But over the years, they've seen other markets evolve. We went past that, you know, pushed the agenda, built the socials confidence. People saw the progress, you know, and then they got comfortable, right? And now, when you come to the sub-region, especially again in Ghana, now they're beginning to like have interest in setting up regulation, even in my country, Ghana. Now it's in conversations now.
Now conversation, interesting.
Yes, now it's in
conversation. Do you see yourself having some sort of involvement from at least just...
I got invited, but I'm not in that region anymore, even though I come from like Ghana. Because
from like an advisory role, just to get your impact or
It's there, you know, it's 50-50.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, so I've seen a few markets where they end up getting regulations, right?
Yeah.
So the majority of the trading population is trading offshore.
Yeah.
Then the local regulator gets involved because they either want to protect the investor or you could say maybe they want to help keep the money in the country. You know, there's kind of multiple angles. But then you would think that, so I'm a trader in X country and I have a local regulation. Yeah. I want to work with only brokers that have this local regulation because I'm protected or have more protections. But what I find, and it's in multiple jurisdictions, these regulators end up having restrictions, leverage restrictions, and these things.
Right.
So it's like now you're forcing me to trade with 30 to 1 leverage, which might actually be more risky for me, even though you're trying to protect me, or even limiting my crypto leverage or these things. So then there's traders in these countries that they don't want to work. They want to work offshore because they have more freedom and flexibility. But at the same time, at least, you know, it is good to just see. And I really hope to see over the next like 10, 15 years that more countries get regulations. If you had to predict the next country in the sub-region to get a regulator, which one do you think it would be?
It's a fight between Ghana and Nigeria now because it's actually in talks as we speak.
Do you feel that now if one of these countries were to get these regulations, do you think this will have a shift in people's credibility or perception of credibility to these brokers? Like, let's say hypothetically, Ghana gets the regulation, Xness gets the regulation. Do you think that we would then see increased market share just because of this? Or are people still, what is a regulator and what does it really mean?
No, I think we would see that increase though. You know, I think we would see, because obviously when it comes to regulation, it's not just limited to what the regulator wants to see the broker do. It also wants to see what the industry players do. I mean, we have people that have set up account management offices and all of that from the mentor side. Yeah. And regulation covers all of that.
Got it.
Of course, from regions that I've seen their regulation, like Rwanda, and then even Kenya, I've read like their regulatory rules and stuff like that. And it's a minimum capital that you have to have from the broker side, which is like, you know, the company. And then even from the average account manager, you know, some credentials, should you have some minimum capital, some reservation, all of those things. So it kind of puts everybody's risk in check. And it was fair though, you know, when I read through what Rwanda had done with their regulation, not in how they regulate their market, but in terms of the documentation, right? Mm-hmm. It made sense. I thought like it was like something that even other market could follow suit and then modify in their way that suits their market. But what it does is that it even ends up creating opportunities and then encouraging innovation and entrepreneurship, you know, because like the regulator is saying, if you want to even do account management, yes, you're free to do that, but have a minimum of your own minimum capital of maybe 100,000 and then put it in X account. So in essence, they're trying to protect the investor at the same time to protect the trader. So if there's like X amount of losses, then we know that we can adjust for it from this money that has been like logged here and all. So with that type of environment, I think it's nothing short of like letting people have that confidence to like do more businesses and then even inviting people that were laid back, you know, into the industry. So it's generally a good perspective to watch, not only from the broker's perspective, but from the players as well, even the investors, the mentors.
Yeah. Do you see the need from an education standpoint to start educating new traders about what regulation means or a lack of regulation, how maybe they're not protected? Yeah. I mean, do you see that there's a demand for that, or we're not there yet and it's still just the markets and the basics?
Demand, I don't think there is demand for that. You know, if there is demand, and then it's coming from the regulator's angle. They are also independent organizations. They are not an NGO. They're also trying to make profits. You know, even if it's for government, they're making revenue for the government. So if they're expanding other markets that they know that the populace are already, you know, into, and also as a means to like, you know, make some licensing fees, fines and whatever to increase revenue, they would. But I don't think that traders are just laid back sitting there be like, why are you not regulating us? And it's more from the from the government side.
What makes brokers like Xness, for example, become credible to, let's say, traders?
In regions that are not regulated, then it's coming from the, if you call it, mentors. You know,
just word of mouth. And
word of mouth.
I trust you and you trust Xness. So
yes, exactly.
Really,
exactly.
So.
And then it's not only limited to I trust you, you trust Xness, right? It goes beyond that because it's more like a stage. The person suddenly changes from I trust you, trust Xness, to I trust Xness. And the person makes their own decision.
When they get their first withdrawal, their trading work.
Yeah, now it's not reliant on what you told them. It's reliant on what they are experiencing.
They form their own opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then it just keeps the whole loop.
I hear so many brokers say that they're like an Africa broker. Yeah. You know, I hear it all the time. We're big into Africa. And when I really look into it, just because they have a M-Pesa in Kenya, and to say you're an Africa broker or Africa-centric broker, that doesn't, or East Africa, doesn't really mean. And just coming once a year to do some events or, you know, do some trainings, I don't see it. What makes or defines a broker that is truly an Africa-centric or Africa-focused broker? What do you need to see from them?
I think basically developing stakeholders.
Stakeholders being the trainers, mentors, partners?
Yes, developing them. Because Yeah, the people that would encourage the industry in the first place. If they're not doing well, then there's no motivation in the industry in the first place. Imagine in my own world, right, God forbid, like there's that sudden news that, oh, Kojo lost all his money from trading and now he's literally going around begging. And like, bro, a lot of people are going to just end it there.
Sure.
You know, so, but if I have issues and then I'm receiving some support, still doing things in the right in terms of like trading conditions and all of that and development and education and experiences, and then I'm still progressing, you know. But I think that all of that is not reliant on the broker in the first place. You know, the broker can aid you, but you, the trader or mentor, should have aided yourself in the first place, mm-hmm. you know. Like, Exxon didn't give me the books to read or yep. the strategy that I trade with now. I did it.
Platform.
Exactly, you know. The way they boosted it is like, okay, you're so good. We feel like only a few people are hearing from you now. We can make more others tap from that. So let's organize a training program here. Let's organize a seminar here. You know, I'm just like relaxed. They put all the logistics together. I go there. It's like, okay, now new people hear me. I'm like, oh, wow, you have so much information. I'm interested. And so that's like the key role that XNS will play. Coming back to your question, it's like, what will we call an Africa-centric broker? You know, like, it's a broker that we want to see developing the people in this line, not just like, okay, who go and bring this investor, or go and bring this money, come and
exactly.
fund.
You ask, you know, 9 out of 10 people that are working, you know, deep in the brokerage, they're just about the traders.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously developing the markets, you need to develop your partners, as you said. And this is why I'm so excited about the Cape Town office opening, because ultimately we have a hub. We'll yeah. now have two hubs within the sub-region. This allows us to do more events. I love the idea of having, you know, kind of front-facing. We can meet with our partners. We can meet with their traders. We can conduct more events.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is going to be a real major game changer for the market, for the company. I mean, as it is, we're doing so well, as you know. Yeah. But at the same time, it's just there's a massive, massive potential. And really, what really excites me as well is, you know, we were talking about the evolution of the trader.
Yeah.
In my opinion, what I see that XNS is very, very good at,
yep.
I don't even think many of the traders in the sub-region understand
yeah,
that yet,
yeah.
you know, from a trade condition perspective and, you know, costs of transactions yeah. and these type of things. So if they're already happy with and have built their own opinion of trust with the company without really understanding kind of what's under the hood
yeah.
completely, it's only going to get better. And I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Now, for us, actually having this new office, you got to visit it. I hope you yeah. liked it. How do you think this can really help, let's say, other mentors and people like yourself in terms of your business? Does it help for you to say, hey, there's an office in Cape Town?
It's interesting, you know, probably the biggest brokerage office that I have visited, you know, in the sub-region. Not like I've seen, let me just say, you know, experienced in the sub-region.
Yeah, but most sub-region offices, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah.
is that it's run by like a partner or
exactly.
it's not a corporate office.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I
branded with another broker,
right.
but it's not broker.
They're not
corporate.
There. Yes. They're not there.
Yeah.
You know, so this is very different. But now like in the continent itself, you know, and like I said, no better place to like have that start than South Africa, you know, like no matter what, we're still going to give that credit to them though, you know, it's something that we experience mm-hmm. in the region, like they spearheaded it, you know, most people that are doing so well in the East, in the North, and even West Africa, right, started getting that inspiration from most of like the traders in South Africa, you know, so if XNS is regulated here and then has a big office here, it's home for us, you know, it's still part of the continent, you know, and it spreads across the continent generally. So it's always nice to come back and see that, okay. So I don't think that now there's like a room for doubts anymore.
Yeah.
You know, yes, that's what it clears. Absolute. You don't even have to travel like miles anymore. If you want to see, okay, just come down here. Yeah, I'm sure XNS will open his arms to,
yeah,
you know.
No doubt about it. It's definitely exciting times. Looking ahead, Kojo, what's your vision of the Africa's trading ecosystem by 2030? Make a couple predictions.
2030.
That's right around the corner to think about. I'm like, wow, that's like 5 years away. That's unbelievable.
I think trading is going to be a household name, right? It's really gaining that momentum, insane momentum, you know, in some key countries, right? If you think about like South Africa, Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, right? But now, if you eliminate those countries, right, then there's still like Africa has 54 countries. And then if I just mentioned barely five,
yeah.
you know, so it's like there's still like a vast you know, gap that has not been filled. You know, if you go to, also maybe because of the language barriers, I'm French speaking, and then English. What I observe is that even in the sub-region, right, the English-speaking countries connect well with the next English-speaking country.
Sure.
So like in Ghana, my friends in trading would be like my other colleagues from Nigeria, right? But there's probably one guy doing so well in maybe Ivory Coast, but he's always speaking in French, so I'm not able to even connect with the person or do anything. There's like that barrier. But I don't think that that's a limitation, by the way, you know, so because, I mean, there's influx of interpreters and AI that just changed. Communication is not even a barrier anymore in today's world. So
yeah.
I think that it's more about the connection, you know. So where I'm driving towards is that, like, as much as trading is gaining some level of relevance, prevalence, if you go to, like, a country like Sierra Leone, Liberia, you know, all of those things, it's like they were in my 2016.
Yeah, precisely.
You get me? Yeah, like, now we've been able to, like, cross so much. And then it's almost a household name in Ghana. Nobody's going to have like doubt when you talk about trading. You know, probably want to get into it or not interested. It's just two things. Not like, oh, I don't know about it. And what is this? How does it? That gap is almost being filled. So in my prediction, by 2030, you know, there'll be like massive awareness. And it's not going to be like something that one has like struggled to find out what it really means or what it is. You know?
I just hope, you know, particularly as you mentioned, some of these kind of super developing trading markets, hopefully, like, as a broker, we can help them to kind of bridge that gap instead of waiting 10 years to kind of figure things out.
Yeah.
As you said, you know, fellow English-speaking countries can work with each other and, you know, maybe, you know, your mentorship can spill over borders and vice versa instead of starting from scratch, let's say, because it's better for everybody to speed up the learning curve if we can. But how do you see education, access, and technology changing the way people are trading in Africa? Now everybody's on their phone. You know, I don't know anybody that's really, the majority of trades are open on, you know, MT4 mobile. But just the access and the technology, how is this changing the game dynamic?
It has significantly changed. You know, internet penetration, smartphone usage, laptops, it's almost accessible now. You know, like almost every youth you see these days is not really like struggling with, okay, I don't have a mobile phone, I don't have this. Everybody has social media now. I know a lot of people using those social media.
Mobile money, I think, was a complete game changer too.
Exactly. You know, so like now, it's just going to keep getting better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the more focused now on is like just the right information. Like I think that they're more lean towards like that information that's going to be a game changer for them than like the necessities to get onto the market, you know, or the accessories to get onto the market.
I've asked you similar variations of this question before, but, you know, we have a lot of new listeners, obviously.
Right.
So what advice would you give, let's say, to the next generation of Africa traders trading now? A couple of pieces of wisdom.
I think that they should think about trading more from a career perspective, you know, than just like a side income thing. And obviously...
Let me interrupt you there. So when you say... I'm just out of university. I have a job. I got to pay my bills. So I can still potentially take it as be full-time or take it as a career and still have my other job, right? I mean, you're not saying quit my job.
Oh, no.
And go on this.
No, of course, no. I mean, the aspect of quit your job is by choice. Like, you can be done with school, right? And then straight on don't want to get into a corporate sector. You want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to have to look for your own capital to do the entrepreneurial endeavor.
Sure.
And then have knowledge in that business you want to do. You would commit some significant level of time to prepare yourself and say, okay, I was done with school, but I got into selling shoes or opening a coffee shop or whatever it is. So you don't just treat trading different. You get me? Mm-hmm. Like for trading, they say, okay, I got my mobile phone and I got $100. I'm a full-time trader. That's what I'm saying. You know, the focus that you're probably asking your family, friends, information, capital sourcing and all of that. So in trading, make sure while you're even in school, if you're a student, you've gained that insane amount of knowledge, you know, understood like psychology handling, risk management, capital access, you know, however to, you know, get your business right and know that, okay, if I was working, this is what I would have covered with my income or my salary. I've been paying my rent. I would have been doing this. I've been doing this. Or even if not working, if I was an entrepreneur and not working in the corporate job, I was done with school, I'm making profit from my business, managing losses, you know, sold goods, whatever it is. I'm still like paying rent and then, yeah, you know, supporting family and everything. So nothing changes in that scope if you bring it to trading.
True.
So if you start and then you're early on and then you just got down with school, all the capital source you could have is $2,000. Live according to that to make a career out of it. Mm-hmm. And you'd grow, you know. Don't think that you're going to turn that $2,000 to $20,000, $100,000 in the next 1 week and the next days. You know, because most time people that blow their trading account and just lose hope in the short term don't live according to their means. You know, I tell people that even me, right, as quote unquote flamboyant as people may see me on social media, I don't spend $10,000 a day, $5,000. I could probably sometimes spend $50 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I need? I could spend like maybe $100 the whole week, you know, and it's just eating the basic things. You know, I go to the regular restaurant, but people have the perspective of, okay, I got to be a trader, spend $2,000 on this shoe.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't blame them entirely. Sometimes some of the lifestyle that they see portray, sure, but that's as limited as what social media will permit us to do.
Are you making a point to actually clarify this and manage expectations,
yeah, yes,
and bring people,
yes,
to reality?
Yes,
yeah?
Yes, very, I do. Good. Yes, absolutely. I do that a lot. You, okay, know, I think that's what makes people more relatable to me. Because aside all this, you have to tell them that, look, guys, it's not us. You know, it's not like, okay, get started trading next week, you buy a Lambo next day. Remember, I think we had this conversation even in the first podcast where I said, like, my first trading capital was $300, and I was always happy to make that $5, $10, and it could support me for the whole week as a student. I didn't,
yeah,
need much.
Yeah.
You know, progressing from the $5,000, I can look, the trading account that I was telling you about, right,
yeah,
is a $30,000. Do you know what I did, Neymar? I put out the investor logins publicly.
Investor password.
Yes, I put the investor password out publicly. And why did I do that? Because I wanted them to see the trading account history, the risk management, the withdrawals and everything. And it was not exaggerated.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm trying to flip that account.
Sure.
I'd make like $2,000 and I'll withdraw it from the $30,000. I'll make $1,000 and I'll withdraw it. $500 and I'll withdraw it. That's an upkeep money. And I was not like over trading every day and doing too much. I wanted them to feel like, okay, if I had got to this level and as a trader, I could even make $30,000, even me with the level I've got, I could live off this without exposing myself to too much risk and then trying to like put the 100 lot, 200.
Sure,
the lot,
sure,
size I was using on the 30,000 was like 0.39, and I stayed consistent,
wow,
with that. Yes.
Okay.
Somebody probably asked, well, why the choice of 0.39? But I measured my risk in monetary terms. You know, normally I like, okay, to measure my risk in money. Every trade I take, I'm like, okay, I'm comfortable risking $700 per single trade. You know, and I'm hoping to make 2 times of that or 3 times of that. So wherever that stop loss permits me to put, then it's only amounting to $700. So when I put on the trade, I don't care about what stop loss in pips. It's like, how much am I going to lose when the market doesn't go my way and it's $700.
Maximum.
You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Maximum.
That's the way
that, and I'm comfortable with that. And then the rest is like me knowing the market direction in terms of my strategy. And then
when you're telling some of these, let's say, new traders, the, yeah, realities of trading, you know, really having realistic expectations and the risks associated, do you feel that sometimes that pushes people away from wanting to trade, or does that actually make them more interested in trading? Because I think, from my experience,
yeah,
on a few occasions, I've been in rooms where I've been with newcomers and I've told people, like, if you guys don't take certain steps, 8 out of 10 of you will lose your money and,
yeah,
you're better off to not invest.
Yeah.
And I almost found like it made people more interested to want to trade. It's kind of like reverse psychology.
Yeah.
So how about from your experience?
It makes them really want to actually get started. You know, they realize that that whole hype was a farce, perhaps, you know, and it's like, okay, realistically, what he's saying is making absolute sense.
Yeah.
You know, relating it again to this trading account thing that I'm talking about, you know, that's like imagining yourself to be working in a corporate environment and then having to like go through the whole month, week on to receive a gratuity, a salary,
yep,
right? And then I was sitting in the comfort of my home with my laptop, mobile phone, and still working day in and out in the same process. Like, you know, watch the market. I don't find opportunity today. I stay away. I find opportunity. I put on the risk. I put on the trade with a measured risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes my way, fine. Doesn't go my way, okay, I wait for the next day. In total, the week ends, and then I can measure, or let's say the month ends, and then my income for the month is $4,000, right, out of the $30,000. Imagine, I made a whole $4,000 on $30,000 in a month, right?
Like, that's amazing.
You get what I mean? Yeah. Now, convert it into any other currency, that takes care of a family, a whole family. You get me?
Potentially.
Exactly. You get me? So people begin to see that reality to it and then know how possible it is than just like getting carried away and swayed to, you know, okay, I want to put like, you know, $1,000 and next week I want to make it $10,000 to go buy this. You know, yeah. So that comes back to like the not so many people not coming to terms with living within their means as traders.
Yeah.
You know, so eventually I let people understand that like the capital will come to you when you're good. You know, we grow, we evolve some way somehow. Yeah. You know, like it just happens. Nature has this way of just progressing what you're committed to. You know, so you, as far as you're good with it, you know. Like, it will just happen, you know. I can't always explain exactly how it will happen, but I've never known anybody who's so good at what they do, and then, like, they're still, like, struggling with exposure or growth.
You know, some recommend. I mean, for me, that's probably my biggest concern with watching the sub-region market grow is a lot of more mentors coming, a lot of education providers, but not necessarily the quality of mentorship and education that I would like to see. And I just get worried that some people can be easily kind of convinced I don't want to say manipulated, but pushed into following this lifestyle dream, which is, it's not sustainable. But this is part of the evolution, right?
Yes, it is.
So
it is.
Looking at things, it seems like Africa's trading evolution is more about access, accountability, and knowledge and trust.
Yeah.
Definitely the continent's next generation of trading isn't just chasing opportunities or building the framework for sustainable trading future. Kojo, again, enlightening, amazing to see you and so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in to Born to Trade. If you missed earlier episodes, catch up to hear how traders across Africa are shaping markets and mastering their craft. We would appreciate it if you could support the podcast by subscribing and leaving us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.